This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the broadcast. Good to have you aboard and hope you'll stay with us for the duration. Have a great show coming up towards the bottom of the hour, which, that's 11:30 here, Toronto time. Anyway, we'll talk with R. Gary Patterson, rock and roll investigator. He's really a rock historian. And sort of made his bones with the whole Paul is dead rumors that came out back in the late 60s and persist really to this day. And of course, he's also written a number of other books, including Hellhounds on Their Trail and Tales from the Rock and Roll Graveyard. He's done some tremendous work with VH1. One in particular that I thought was just brilliant was all to do with the 27 Club, all of these famous musicians. From Janis Joplin to Kurt Cobain. I mean, the list is as long as your arm. Musicians that checked out at the age of 27. And he's also done episodes or series on Hollywood curses. R. Gary Patterson will be here as we commemorate the 73rd birthday of former Beatle John Lennon. Hard to believe. He's been gone nearly 33 years. We'll talk about Lennon's life, his times, and his curious death. You know, some people still maintain, and I think there's, I don't think you can dismiss it out of hand. In fact, even one of the New York homicide detectives investigating Lennon's death admitted to British journalist author Fenton Bresler that there was something very suspicious about Mark David Chapman's behavior immediately following Lennon's shooting, how he sat down on the curb. He could have he could have ran across the street and jumped onto a subway and disappeared into the night, and yet he just sat down on the sidewalk, removed Catcher in the Rye from his hip pocket and began reading. Anyway, it struck this police detective as very strange, and he didn't rule out entirely that, maybe Chapman may have been programmed. Not necessarily the gunman, but perhaps a Manchurian candidate programmed to be a patsy. To be there the wrong time, the right place at the wrong time, if you will. And all this talk about, mind control and Manchurian candidates, electronic harassment and so forth, pretty much, disparaged by the mainstream media, except now it's starting to percolate to the surface. We're hearing, for example, the horrible circumstances at the Washington Naval Yard a couple of weeks ago, and the alleged gunman in that instance. Was complaining about hearing, voices in his head, complaining about being electronically harassed, being subjected to ELF, electromagnetic waves. And as I say, even the mainstream media caught on to that. So this whole idea of some shadowy organization targeting certain individuals for mind control, gaining new currency every day, really. And so we'll chat about that. And in the not-too-distant future, Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips will be on the program as well. Of course, Kathy, probably one of the most well-known high-profile survivors of the Monarch mind control program, sort of an offshoot of MKUltra, a victim who and a recovered survivor. She'll be on the program along with Mark Phillips, who is sort of credited with rescuing Kathy O'Brien from the clutches of this this horrible program. And in fact, Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips are coming up to Toronto. I just want to mention this because my good friends Patrick and Kadena from Conspiracy Culture, 1696 Queen Street West, are putting on a spectacular event. MK Ultra and Project Monarch, A Survivor's Tale with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. And that is taking place Sunday, October the 20th. And I guess for, you know, for ticket information, the best thing to do is go to the website conspiracyculture.com and call Patrick and Kadena and inquire about tickets. However, there's someone else on that bill I think you'd be very interested in. And this is someone who is also very outspoken about mind control and MKUltra and Hollywood, for that matter. And it's a great pleasure to welcome to the program to discuss MKUltra and how it rules Hollywood, actress, comedian, writer, television producer, Roseanne Barr. Roseanne, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And welcome to the program. I appreciate your time tonight. You'll be also coming to Toronto on the 20th of October to talk about MKUltra and Hollywood. And
I'm there to introduce Kathy and Mark and talk about, you know, some of the stuff you're talking about also.
I have to commend you, you know, for someone who has your stature in Hollywood to come out and openly talk about MKUltra and its, you know, how it has the film and television industry in its clutches. Very brave thing for you to do. Was there a
I've always talked about it.
You have?
I've always talked about it. Yeah, I have for decades talked about it. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah, so you know, I've seen a lot of stuff, and you know, mind control is, you know, that's a huge subject, and I'm glad that you know, I'm glad to be part of. Bringing it more to people's attention.
Was when you say you've been talking about it for decades, I mean, but when you talked about it, I guess, more recently, it really caught a lot of people's attention. Why was that? I mean, was there for you this moment, this aha moment, where you sort of lined up all of, you connected all the dots and it became clear to you that MKUltra was running Hollywood?
Well, you know, it doesn't just run Hollywood. There's specific things that, there are specific things that Hollywood does, but it's not just Hollywood. It's the collective unconscious. It rules all that, and it has since, before from Germany. That's where it all came from. Monarch and all that stuff came from Nazis. So I'm Jewish. And I always was on the trail of it since Operation Paperclip, when they brought over Nazis to the United States to head, our medical, medical and space and health things. You know, I've always just kind of been very interested in following that, how that happened, how people we supposedly defeated came to, you know, pretty much run our country.
Yes, it seems
several decades later, and they did it with mind control. And you know, it's not just Hollywood; it's religion too, and all popular media. It's the news; it's everything.
Sure, it's pervasive.
Patriarchy itself. I mean, it's patriarchy itself. It's a hierarchical system that terrorizes people so that they can't think.
Now, when you talk about, and I'm going to talk about Hollywood here, and I agree, I mean, it is pervasive, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around, you know, the statement that it rules in Hollywood. Are you talking sort of in broad terms in the sense that they have used film and television as sort of a mass brainwashing tool, or are you talking even more specifically, for example, where individuals, let's say actors, artists in Hollywood, are in fact victims of mind control, ritualistic abuse, and so forth.
Both things. Mm-hmm. It's the narrative that everybody in this country swallows, and it's in every movie, all television, all media. It's a big fat fairy tale, and if you break it down, and really break it down and see how it works. Yeah, it has victims, and it has agents.
Right. We've known that there is sort of a CIA entertainment liaison office, and the CIA will fund Hollywood movies and try to shape the message. Did you ever experience any of that firsthand?
It definitely shapes the message, and nothing gets made that it doesn't approve. Nothing will be made. No movies, no TV, nothing.
Comedian, actor, writer, producer Roseanne Barr with us talking about MK Ultra, and she will be in Toronto along with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips on October the 20th. Conspiracy culture.
I'm going to be there talking about how we can heal from it, and that's what I want to bring to this whole discussion. And Kathy and I talk a lot about what are the ways that our returning troops and other people who have PTSD. And, things that are trauma-based programming and just living with trauma itself. What are the things we can do to get over it, to put it behind us and heal from it? And that's what I'm going to be talking about.
We're going to take a time out in just a few minutes. Can you stay with us? And on the other side, maybe we can talk about that?
Sure.
Okay. Before the break, though, I just wanted to ask you. You've talked about having been treated for a dissociative identity disorder, and I know mm-hmm. from sort of a casual historian looking at the sort of the origins of MKUltra and the Nazis and sort of the barbaric methods that they used. We're talking now 70 years ago through ritualistic abuse. To create in an otherwise healthy mind, to fracture the psyche and create a dissociative identity disorder.
That's the perfect slave.
Yeah, that's 70 years ago. And do you ever think about, that's what they were doing 70 years ago. What could they be capable of doing now?
Well, you said it yourself, what they're capable of doing now. I mean, they're capable of a lot of things. And, the only thing they're not capable of is fixing anything or apologizing to people or turning around the big march to the edge of the cliff where they want us all to jump off. Those are the only things that they're incapable of changing.
I mean, we talked about the origins of this program with the Nazi scientists and so forth who were brought over to America, exfiltrated. Some of them escaped the hangman's noose at Nuremberg, were exfiltrated in the United States, and largely took over the security apparatus, which is, as you say, is kind of strange. Supposedly the Allies won the war, and yet they turned this over to the Nazis. I'm just wondering, though, the music is coming up here. We'll take a time out. We'll come back. Roseanne Barr discussing MKUltra. We'll talk about how we can get out from under this and much more. Here on The Conspiracy Show, stay with us. Welcome back. And neglected off the top to welcome a new affiliate, KFLDAM 870 in Yakima, Washington. KFLDAM 870 is the news talk leader in Yakima. Welcome to the program. Roseanne Barr stays with us for a few moments. Outspoken actress, comedian, writer, television producer, and will be in Toronto October 20th at a Conspiracy Culture Presents event. For information, go to their website, conspiracyculture.com. Give Patrick and Kadena a call, and they'll tell you how to get tickets. Roseanne Barr will be part of a panel along with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. Kathy O'Brien, of course, a very high-level MKUltra victim and recovered survivor. Roseanne Barr talking about Hollywood's darkest secret, mind control, which, of course, is very pervasive, all aspects of society. Roseanne, you wanted to also talk about how we get out from under this, and for people who, whether they've just been, brainwashed or perhaps even specifically targeted, and we're hearing every day from different people who believe they are being targeted, electronic harassment, organized gang stalking, and so forth. What do they do?
What does who do?
What can people do who believe that they are, well, all of us, I guess, are victims to a certain extent of brainwashing and mind control.
Right.
How do we get out from under this?
Well, if you have PTSD or DID or any of these kind of mental health issues that come from trauma-based, I guess you could say, shock and awe. That's one way of saying it. You can heal from it. And you can do that, I think, through meditation and heightened awareness and really walking it back to source to see where it came from. And also, we're very much for the legalization of marijuana in the treatment of PTSD and stuff like that because, you know, it definitely helps, and we hope that... We're seeing, like, progress all over the United States with our troops who have PTSD and the Veterans Administration, all these places accepting marijuana now more and more as a treatment for PTSD. It's a great treatment also for breaking out of mind control. If you, put that together with, meditation and talking to other people who have healed from it, who've synthesized their broken and fractured personality parts, it's not that hard. It's like, the fact of it is that it's so false and really so stupid at its core that it's not that hard to walk out of. The reason people do have problem walking out of it is because all the fear that's layered in the fractured mind about just that fact, about leaving it. Oh, my God, there's so much fear put into people to prevent them from actually, thinking in an integrated and synthesized manner. So, meditation also helps with the fear. So it's like directly, facing it directly and head on with like-minded people, and we can get out of it and turn it around and try to stop it and also give some logical analysis to it so that people can understand that making it visible is so important because the reason it thrives, one of the reasons, besides the fact that it's sealed in violence and all kinds of other psychological terrors, is because it's invisible and because it's so pervasive that you can't even see it. So when it becomes visible, it really, really loses a lot of its sting and a lot of its power. But we have to bring it into visibility, and that's why we're doing what we're doing, because we've seen many people get free and turn their mind and their life and everything else around.
I hear from people on a weekly basis, certainly. In fact, I received an email from a woman the other week who is an ER doctor who's 60 years uh-huh. old and getting ready to retire. And she said, I was hoping to enjoy my retirement, but she said she is being targeted for some sort of, she's being harassed electronically. She's not sure what's going on, who's behind it. When you start hearing from professional people, I've also heard from sheriffs in the United States who claim that they're being targeted. I mean, are we talking about the same thing when I'm talking about electronic harassment, organized gang stalking? Is that part of what you're also talking about with mind control?
That's just a tactic that they use to keep people silent. And, when you look into the abuse that creates, the kind of child abuse that is the foundation of MK Ultra, that's what you really have to look at, So I hope I answered your question.
Sure. If I could ask you, and I don't know if this is something you discuss, and if it's not, that's fine. But, you've talked about your dissociative identity disorder. Do mm-hmm. you now, tracing it back to its root, was that a result of some sort of a mind control a program? That were the perps? Was that their intended purpose?
No, mine was a result of shock and awe, as a really young child. And a lot of it did have to do with Nazis, and a lot of it, in fact, all of it did. I was raised in an apartment house with survivors, Jewish people, who my grandparents brought over from German death camps, and I was just raised in that. So the things they would talk about, the things they watched on TV, I mean, that wasn't appropriate for a girl of 3 years old to watch, but I did. And I was encouraged to do so. And I do trace it all back to that, because when I saw those pictures at a young age, I had no way to understand what that was. I had no way of containing that information. And it did cause me to split. And, you know, it also is the reason why I'm talking about fascism and terror and all those things that Nazis did. And, you know, three years old was not, you know, I don't advise anybody else to show their kids pictures that I saw then. But, you know, that's what caused my split. And also living among people who had survived all of those horrors caused my split too, because it was just a normal way that we talked in our family about things. I mean, you know, they would tell, you know, people in my family would tell like these horrifying stories of things they had lived through, or things other people were talking about in our apartment building. And yeah, it was terror. I just call it shock, awe, and terror. And it did do that to me. And I'm 61 now, I still can't contain those images, and I just, you know, I still I'm still in shock and terror. Well, and trauma that those things didn't just happen then. They happen all over the world all the time. And the only reason they happen is because, like I say, they have become invisible and unseeable, and that is part of it.
I think to a lesser degree, or maybe not, you may see it's the same thing, but we're all being subjected to shock and awe almost on a nightly basis when you look at...
Yes, we are.
So to what extent are we all then victims of mind control?
Well, you know, it's a capitalist tool. I mean, if you're really going to go into it, you know, it's a tool that keeps you in your house afraid of everything, then you just buy things. So, you know, to keep people disaffected, disconnected, ignorant, and, you know, fearful, that's how MK Ultra works and how it continues, because as long as you don't see it, you know, as long as people are not aware of it, as long as they don't see it, as long as it's not visible, you know, it thrives in darkness and secrecy. And so it continues that people who speak up about it or say anything about it, you know, they're immediately, I do think, you know, you're attacked. First of all, you're called crazy, because that's really hilarious, because most of the people who have, in fact, all of the people who survived MKUltra have mental health issues. So that's how they attack any child who tells on them, even when they're in an adult body, if that former child tells on, you know, the agents and the perpetrators, you know, it still works to silence the victim, to harass the victim. I'm sure they do microwaves and everything else I've heard about. I'm sure they do, because it's imperative that nobody knows what's going on. Otherwise, it couldn't continue. Like I say, you know, if the American public were, you know, was aware of what's going on in our government and our country, they would stop it and demand accurate representation in government from their representatives. They wouldn't be putting up with people being lobbyists, inside trading, and all the other stuff they hide. And, you know, the only people who are ever going to come forward and tell on any of these people are people who lived through it, because they are positive that it goes on.
How did you hook?
And their lives are proof.
How did you hook up with Kathy O'Brien and her story?
Well, we have mutual friends. I used to do a radio show in Los Angeles at KPFK Radio, and we had mutual friends there, and I had Kathy on as a radio guest and interviewed her, and you know, we just really liked each other right away because we're on so much of the same wavelength in the way that we understand how the brain works, how it works when it's been divided, and how it works incredibly, like an incredible machine, when it has facts and things like that and has some level of integration. Then this human machine, this brain, is a mighty, mighty weapon.
Roseanne Barr on the line, and she is, of course, an award-winning comedian, actress, writer, producer. Will be in Toronto October 20th, a Conspiracy Culture event, 1696 Queen Street. If you go through the website, conspiracyculture.com, and they'll let you know how you can get tickets. The information will be there as well. And Roseanne will be here introducing Kathy O'Brien, of course, a high-level MKUltra survivor, along with Mark Phillips, who helped rescue Kathy O'Brien. And Roseanne Barr will be speaking about MK Ultra and Hollywood.
And I'm so happy that it's in a church. Last time Kathy and Mark and I spoke, we also spoke in a church in Los Angeles, and you can find that online. I think that was the same subject, MK Ultra in Los Angeles about 5 years ago. And so things have really, you know, they've really moved forward since that time. And
that's for sure. You know, I was mentioning that the idea of mind control and electronic harassment and so forth is starting to gain currency in the mainstream media because of some, you know, horrible tragic events. Are you at least heartened by that aspect, that the mainstream media seems to be waking up?
Well, you know, I'm very heartened that people all over our country and everywhere in the world are like, you know, going to the next level of awareness where we have to go if we're going to save ourselves. So, yeah, I'm thrilled. And, you know, I do whatever I can do every day in my life simply because I don't like fascism. I don't like, sexual abuse of children. I don't like any of that stuff, so I have to fight every day. Otherwise, I feel like, you know what I mean, that I can't just sit back and take it easy, especially now where it's starting to catch fire and people are like actually talking about it, naming it, making it visible. I mean, it's very exciting, very cool. I'm very happy and excited for people to hear Kathy O'Brien speak because she's a fantastic speaker and Mark's a great speaker. And, the information is, it's extremely healing information. I'm going to also give people ways to breathe, to relax themselves so that, you know, right now I do believe that a lot of mentally ill people are being activated. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're being activated through drugs and all the other things they do to people who have, you know, problems, first of all, because they're divided. They have a divided mind, which comes from all this crap, abuse and every other thing, lying, shock, you know, nothing making sense, all the things that they have in place to keep everybody quiet. And, I'm just thrilled that people are waking up. And like I say, I'm going to also give breathing exercises that will help you not be activated, because I do think they activate the mentally ill first and the disaffected and disenfranchised. They're working real hard to activate them too and to turn us all against each other. But I really believe, like, if we have some kind of tool that allows us to self-calm, you know what I mean? And
yes,
not be activated when we feel our blood pressure rising, when we feel our heartbeat speeding up, we can fight on a personal meditative level. And that's where this whole battle is really taking place, in the penthouse of the mind, the penthouse level of the mind. And Kathy and I have, talked for many, many years about meditation and how it is a great weapon against mind control.
All right, and we'll look forward to hearing you on October the 20th right here in Toronto. Roseanne Barr, thank you so much for your time.
You.
All right, good night. Back with more of the conspiracy culture as we talk John Lennon here. Stay with us.
See, this is where you can tell all about it. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
As we're welcomed back by John Lennon's Mind Game, a terrific album from late 1973, November of 1973, I believe that album came out. And how appropriate that song as we come off the tail end of an interview with Roseanne Barr coming to Toronto October 20th to talk about MK Ultra and how it rules Hollywood. You know, Roseanne has always been controversial and sort of put herself out there on a limb, but now talking publicly about Hollywood's dark secret and the legacy of the Nazis and their MK Ultra program and how they are using Hollywood and, of course, mind control pervasive in all aspects of society. And there are those who still who maintain. And I think, you know, you can't dismiss this out of hand, that John Lennon's killer, Mark David Chapman, may have been a programmed patsy. Maybe not the gunman himself, but simply programmed to stand there, be in the wrong place at the wrong time. We'll discuss that over the next half hour or so with a very good friend of the program. He's really, I think, one of the world's foremost rock historians. And a native Tennessean with a passion for rock and roll. He's a published author with Simon & Schuster. Our Gary Patterson is probably best known, or at least initially, for his groundbreaking book, The Walrus Was Paul. And that, of course, sort of laid to rest, or at least tried to address, many of the Paul is dead rumors that were floating around back in the late 1960s. And he followed that up with Hellhounds on Their Trail, where he continued his popular theme of rock and roll's enduring myths and legends. And, of course, Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses, which came out, I believe, in 2004. And he's always working on something, and it's always a great pleasure to welcome back to the program our Gary Patterson. How are you, Gary?
I'm doing great, Richard. I was just thinking, it's October. I'll be with Richard. We'll talk about John Lennon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, and it's great to have you on again. It's been too long, my friend.
It has.
Hard to believe Lennon would be nearly 73.
Oh, it is hard to believe. You know, this his birthday, October 9th, coming up, and 73 years old.
Nearly 33 years since he left us. You know, so much has been written and talked about Lennon's life, and I thought we could spend a few moments talking about some things that people may not be aware of concerning John Lennon. And I interviewed a ufologist not too long ago up here in Canada by the name of Grant Cameron. And Grant wrote an article or a blog, I guess, recently on his website talking about Paul McCartney's 1997 album, Flaming Pie. And then he sort of discussed, you know, where that name came from and its connection to Lennon's UFO sightings. What can you tell me about Lennon's sort of, I guess he had two sort of close encounters?
Well, it was very interesting because after he had gone on his Lost Weekend, which actually turned in much longer than that, and he was with May Pang, they had an apartment in New York, and that's where he really saw a UFO sighting. And have you ever interviewed May? Has she been on your show?
I didn't speak with her. I was producing a show, and I had May Pang on the program, but I don't think we talked about that.
Okay. May's fabulous. We're going to have to get her on. And she was telling about what she saw. And obviously John had been out front, and she was taking a shower, and he had gone out completely naked, and he sees it, and it's like, you know, it's just hovering there, and it's very close to him. And she went out, she saw it, and she was describing it, and the story goes that as it was about to take off, John yelled at it, "Hey, take me with you, take me with you." And it left. And then they didn't know what to do because, I mean, he could call in and say, "Listen, I just saw a UFO. My name's John Lennon." And he thought, well, that's going to be crazy. You know, everybody's going to say John Lennon saw a UFO. So he actually kept it secret for a while. And then, of course, what was it, Walls and Bridges, where he wrote, "On this date, I saw a UFO."
Yes.
And he puts it on the back of his album. But May described it perfectly. So it wasn't just John Lennon. I mean, May Pang was there.
And this was when they were living in the village at the time, I believe. Not the Dakota,
right,
but in the village.
Not the Dakota, in the village.
All right, listen, we'll take a time out. We'll come back as we hear Whatever Gets You Through the Night coming up here from that album, Walls and Bridges. Back on the other side, our Gary Patterson, the life and times and death of John Lennon. Here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
This is calm, it's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome back. Our Gary Patterson is with us as we commemorate what would be the 73rd birthday of former Beatle John Lennon. Here's something many people may not know about Lennon. He was a choir boy and a Boy Scout. Lennon, the great rock and roll rebel and iconoclast, started his singing career as a choir boy at St. Peter's Church in Liverpool, I guess, and was a member of the 3rd Allerton Boy Scout Troop. Our Gary Patterson, we were talking about his UFO encounter in Greenwich Village, I guess sort of the early to mid-70s, when he was living with May Pang at the time. He and Yoko were estranged. Now, what precipitated that separation? When she basically kicked him out and said, you know, go to L.A. and come back when you're ready.
Well, it's kind of interesting. May Pang suggests that it's because Yoko wanted John out of the way so she could have an affair with a member of her band. And she actually had May go with John. And May really didn't want to go. But she convinced her to go with John. They went to Los Angeles. You know, they rented a place. They ran in with Harry Nilsson. Two of the Beatles would come out and visit. So in her book, I mean, she talks about, you know, the Lost Weekend, which actually was much longer. And then when she fell in love with John, Yoko would call every day. And someone had some form of control over him. But eventually, the song he played, you know, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, that he did with Elton John, he told Elton that the song ever hit number one. He had performed with him live. He did so in New York, and that was the night he and Yoko got back together again. And May was out, just left out. And May told me that when John was murdered, that she received a call from his friends in London and didn't want her to be alone. I think she spent that night with David Bowie in New York. So, you know, and May, you know, she's a very bright lady, and she was someone who assembled all the studio times and kept the records and when John would record. And one of the strangest things, you remember Number 9 Dream, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, you remember that voice that goes, John whispers his name?
Yes.
That was May Pang.
Ah.
But after Yoko comes back, Yoko takes off May's voice. And she does the Johns on Number 9 Dream.
Oh, now, interesting.
Kind of, yeah, I thought they were in it.
One of the things I noticed about, and I want to get back to the other UFO encounter he had at the Dakota, the story that Uri Geller tells. But before that, you know, talking about the tracks on his albums, and I've always noticed, you know, Lennon loved to double track his records. And then I heard recently that Lennon did that because he actually hated the sound of his own voice. Is that true? Have you heard that?
You know, I know that a lot of artists hate the sound of their voice. Jimi Hendrix hated the sound of his voice, and that's why, like on Purple Haze and some of the other songs, he's in the background with a lot of reverb. But John Lennon had one of the greatest voices in rock and roll. But I guess after a while, you sort of hear yourself and you hear every flaw you have. It's like you look in a mirror and you see every imperfection. And I think John was a perfectionist when it came to it. And I think double tracking it made it, you know, made it better.
Yeah, apparently he asked he asked George Martin to cover the sound of his voice. He said something like, "No, can't you smother it with tomato ketchup or something?"
Yeah. You know, George Martin would say, "Well, this is the greatest voice I've ever recorded in rock and roll." You know, and he still says that. I mean, Lennon's voice is fabulous. And when you listen to the Beatles and you grow up with them and you listen to it all the time, you'd be surprised how many songs John actually sings.
Yes.
You know, the
yes.
hits. And, of course, Paul has his share, too. But, you know, John was really the singer. He was the one who really pushed these songs.
The Uri Geller story, where Lennon was, I believe at this point now, he's back in the Dakota. He wakes up one night and he has this strange alien encounter. Are you familiar with that story, the Uri Geller story?
He sees a light under the bedroom door. And when he gets up, he opens the door and he swears that there are at least three creatures in the Dakota. And they're like, bug-like, as he referred to them, and he tried to, like he was trying to step on them. But then a ray hits him, and he's paralyzed. And he finds himself, like, floating back into his bedroom. And Yoko doesn't notice anything about this. And back into his bed. And when he wakes up, he has these three strange stone-like objects in his hand. And before he was murdered, Uri Geller says that Lennon had told him this story, and he gave him the stones. And he says, "I don't know what these are. They may be a passage on a UFO, you know, like a ticket. But, you know, if you look at them, you have them." And then he was murdered. So Uri Geller has these stones. I don't know if I've ever seen a picture of them or had him come out and actually show them anywhere, but that's the story.
Amazing. And, well, given, you know, Lennon's drug use, one could sort of dismiss that. On the other hand, the other UFO encounter with May Pang seems to have, you know, some credence to it. So hard to dismiss it out of hand. It'd be interesting to talk to Uri Geller. There was one quote, I think, that was attributed to Geller that Grant Cameron was telling me. Geller said, now, I thought they were sort of like egg-shaped or something, and Geller said that he was afraid to have them checked out in case they, you know, they found on them, you know, in small writing, made in Taiwan or something. I guess he didn't want to destroy the myth so forth.
Well, the myth makes a great story. If it is, you know, I mean, it's just fascinating. And maybe when Lennon yelled, "Hey, come back and get me," or "Take me with you," then maybe that's what they were trying to do that night.
Our Gary Patterson is with us, and we're talking about the life and death of John Lennon. What are you working on these days, Gary?
Well, right now I've got several chapters of a new book, and I'm flying out to Denver Saturday, and Sunday I'm recording two television shows with George Norrie for his show he has called Beyond Belief. So I'll be doing two shows with him on Sunday and then flying back on Monday. So I'm a little busy, but I've got time, and I've got some great stories coming up. So it's going to be fun for me. It's just a matter of getting everything down and budgeting the time so I can do everything. But you know how it is, Richard. It's just you just gotta do it.
Excellent. Of course you do. You gotta persevere. Getting back to John Lennon. And I mentioned, you know, I was talking to Roseanne Barr off the top. We were talking about mind control, and there is obviously a connection to that with Lennon, and the theory that Mark David Chapman may have been programmed either as the gunman or as a patsy, simply to stand sort of in the wrong place at the wrong time. And even the Fenton Bresler, who wrote sort of one of the definitive books concerning, you know, Lennon's murder, interviewed the New York detective, one of the New York detectives responsible for the case, and even he admitted that Chapman's behavior was very odd after Lennon's death. He simply sat down on the curb in a very calm manner and waited for the authorities to arrive, which sort of, you know, has all the telltale signs, some say, of a programmed assassin. What do you make of that whole that whole theory that, that Chapman was programmed?
Well, you know, my goodness, I've heard this ever since Lennon was murdered, and it falls into the Manchurian Candidate. And even the movie Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson used, you know, Catcher in the Rye. And it was odd that Chapman says, you know, this is my story, and he has a copy of Catcher in the Rye, and he's reading it again. And, of course, you know, if that was to trigger it, it just seems odd that a few hours before he's smiling while John Lennon is signing his Double Fantasy out. And then he has enough to come back and say, John Lennon, and shoots him five times and kills him. And just calmly sits there. I mean, to me, psychologically, it doesn't seem like something a normal person would do. I don't know whether he programmed himself into the idea that he kept calling himself John Lennon. He married an Asian woman, you know, like John had with Yoko. He became obsessed with him and felt like, you know, Lennon had betrayed the youth of the country and the world because of Imagine. And he used to sit around with his guitar and do these church groups in Georgia, and he'd sing Imagine There's No John Lennon. And, you know, it was very odd. It seems like he tried to talk himself out of it a few times. And when you read Let Me Take You Down and some of the other sources, Chapman, you know, said that, you know, he asked the devil to give him the power to kill John Lennon. And then you hear the story that, you know, he was actually exorcised while he was in prison and demons were cast out. So if you're talking about a supernatural use of control, you might have a have something there, too. And the government, you know, Richard, why did the government want to get rid of John Lennon in 1980? If they were going to kill John Lennon, they would have got him in 72, I think.
Right, wait, right. He was far more outspoken. However, it's been suggested that Lennon was getting ready to, remember, from 75 to 1980, he was sort of the devoted house husband, baking bread inside the Dakota and so forth, out of the public eye.
Right.
The very next day, it would have been December 9th, Lennon was supposed to fly to San Francisco and take part in some sort of organized labor protest. It seems like he was starting to get political again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just thinking that the problem Lennon had is when he and Yoko flew to the United States, and when they landed in New York, the first, you know, person to meet him was Abbie Hoffman. And, of course, Abbie Hoffman and other radicals of that time period being associated with John Lennon got John Lennon on the FBI charts. And somewhere in New York City was a radical album, what was 71, I believe. And his song John Sinclair, and the FBI was very interested. They considered him dangerous, tried to, you know, deport him. They tried to drum up maybe narcotics charges, and they couldn't make that happen. But, you know, at that time he was at his most dangerous, because in 72, this would be the first year that 18-year-olds could actually vote in a presidential election. And if John Lennon went out on the road and campaigned against Richard Nixon and the Vietnam War, all these people who were 18 grew up with the Beatles. He would have had significant influence on them. So he would be very dangerous to the political structure in 1971-72. In 1980, if he was regaining his equilibrium, so he would go out and he would campaign on social issues, he could be dangerous. But, you know, a lot of times there's a big difference when you're doing, you know, John Sinclair and a radical movement in 71 and watching the wheels go round. And, you know, perhaps that would be one thing that you eliminate him. You don't have a problem. Now, think of the counterculture. When you had the counterculture, who were the main leaders? Yeah, Jimi Hendrix. The Black Panthers were involved with Jimi.
Right.
You had Janis Joplin. You had John Lennon. You had Jim Morrison. And those were your big four. And Mama Cass, too, by the way. She had a lot of radical background groups. And what do they all have in common? They were all dead.
Right.
And Lennon lasted longer, 1980. I mean, when you have Hendrix and Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison, when Hendrix died, I think it was 2 weeks before Joplin, she said, well, I'm glad I didn't die today because he would have got all the press. Well, she died 2 weeks later. And Morrison was in Miami, and he told his friends, he said, you know, you're drinking with number three. And he was dead in Paris. And you take a look at all this, it's just odd that at Monterey and, you know, with Lenin, probably the greatest radical of all, being dead by 1980, I mean, what are the odds of that?
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Gary, always a pleasure to have you with us, and let's not leave it so long next time. Let's see if we can get another show together maybe before the end of the year, and good luck with all of your projects.
Richard, we just need to work on something together and have some fun.
That's for sure. We will talk. In the meantime, I really encourage people to take a walk on the dark side. Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses, available at good bookstores everywhere, and Amazon.com, of course. Gary, thanks again for this. Be well, my friend.
All right. You too, Richard. Talk to you soon.
All right. You can say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, the website richardserrett.com. And as always, follow the truth. Welcome, welcome, one and all, to the program. Good to have you aboard. And good also to welcome our brand new affiliate. Actually, I think they begin carrying the show around October the 20th, but KFLD AM 870 in Yakima, Washington, news talk leader in Yakima. KFLD AM 870, welcome to the Conspiracy Show, and we'll add that to our growing list of affiliates. As I say, yes, October the 20th, I'm seeing here, they will join us. Recently, on the program, we spoke with Roseanne Barr. A great pleasure finally to speak with her. She's always been so outspoken, and I admire her courage, really, particularly recently when she, well, she's been talking about this for decades, but only recently has the mainstream media sort of started to pay attention. It was a fairly lengthy article in Esquire magazine not too long ago. They interviewed Roseanne. Part of that interview, they talked about her comments in which she sort of revealed Hollywood's dirty secret, and that is that it is ruled by MK Ultra and mind control. And she's actually coming to Toronto October the 20th, and she'll speak about that. That this is a conspiracy culture special event. Our good friends Patrick and Kadena down on Queen Street, 1696 Queen Street. Go to the website, conspirit.com, and you can get tickets. This will be a Q&A and a meet and greet and a book signing. And one of the things that Roseanne Barr is going to do, in addition to speaking about MK Ultra in Hollywood and how we can all sort of recover from this mass brainwashing that's being achieved in part through the entertainment industry and shock and awe is and how to heal from that. But she's also going to be introducing Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. Now, back in 1977, the U.S. Congress opened hearings into the reported abuses concerning the CIA's top secret mind control research program, codenamed MKUltra. And on February 8, 1988, a top-level MK-Ultra victim, Kathy O'Brien, was covertly rescued from her mind control enslavement by an intelligence insider named Mark Phillips. And their seven-year pursuit of justice was stopped, they say, for reasons of national security. Kathy O'Brien is a vocal and recovered survivor of the CIA's MK-Ultra Project Monarch operation, tracing her path from child pornography and recruitment into the program to serving as a top-level intelligence agent and White House sex slave. Her story is a definitive eyewitness account of government corruption that implicates some of the most prominent figures in global politics. Kathy O'Brien, welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Well, you got me.
Oh, it's Mark.
Hi, Richard. This
Hi.
Is Mark.
Mark Phillips. Let's introduce Mark. He's a native of Nashville, Tennessee for nearly 30 years. He was a highly successful marketing and advertising executive for two airlines and medical equipment manufacturing companies. While he lacks the published academic credentials as a scholar, professional writer, or mental health physician, he's recognized internationally by mental health and law enforcement as a credible authority on the secret science concerning external control of the mind. Throughout his career, he also held a Defense Department-issued top-secret security clearance as he was exposed to various classified behavioral modification projects. Mark was required to sign an oath of secrecy, and to this day he's restricted by sedition laws from revealing certain specific still-classified details that directly relates to his employment. Mark, how are you?
Doing very well, and we appreciate this opportunity to be on your show tonight. And we're looking forward to coming back to Toronto. You know, Toronto is a fond memory for us. That was the first place we ever spoke publicly.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, that goes back a long time. Since that time, Kathy and I, without the help of having any sort of support so far as a publicist or even a publisher, we've managed somehow to get our information out because, you know, truth, you know, it will always be the truth and will always rise to the top. And when people hear it, no matter how far out of its out of their experiences or even knowledge base, it's still they can begin to open their eyes and see what's happening. And we're very pleased to say that Transformation of America, which was our condensed testimony that we gave before Congress or provided to both houses in Congress, is now in 14 languages, and it's in its 16th, I think, edition is what we're going into in the English language. So it's all been done with no advertising, no marketing, nothing except word of mouth.
Mark, give us the... you know, I wish we had, you know, 3 hours, really deserves 3 hours to drill down into this topic. But how did you come to rescue Kathy O'Brien from Project Monarch?
Well, it's a long story, but I'm going to make it as brief as possible. Her handler, a fellow by the name of Alex Houston, he was a stage hypnotist and a ventriloquist of sorts, supposedly a comedian, not. But he worked in the country music industry, and he was involved in supplying those people with cocaine and whatever else. But Alex Houston, I didn't know anything about him. A mutual friend had seen my picture in the newspaper in Nashville so many times in the business section where I was working on this global plan or that U.S. State Department plan, and he asked me if I would talk to Alex because he had an opportunity to start a joint venture company in China, and he needed someone that had the credentials that I hold. So I looked into it. It looked very viable, and quick answer is I went to China. We signed the deal. I did about, I don't know, $12 million worth of business for them in 2 weeks so that their balance of trade would have been correct. At the ribbon-cutting ceremonies in the Shenzhen Industrial Province, I was approached by a Chinese intelligence officer, and everyone around me just kind of drifted away. And this guy began to show me a dossier he had on Alex Houston and on me as well. He didn't seem too alarmed over the fact that I had worked for the Defense Department or that I had worked for the intelligence communities. Matter of fact, he just wasn't concerned about that at all. What he was concerned about was my business partner, Alex Houston, who was, of course, not there, but... he told me, he said, this man has got to be out of our agreement or we'll have to cancel it. And he said, the reason why is because he's involved in drugs, child and adult pornography. All of these three charges are They put you to death in China for any of them. He is also in the money laundering business for the intelligence community, and his involvement with adult and child prostitution goes all the way to the White House. Well, I've been around, and I've seen a lot. I had never imagined that somebody like Alex Houston would have connections all the way to the White House. It was just impossible for me to wrap my head around. But he gave me enough details and showed me some pictures that were as disgusting as you can imagine. I went back, and when we concluded the ribbon cutting ceremony, I went back home, and when I did, I called someone I knew at the U.S. Department of State and began to relate all of this stuff, and they took it down. They said, someone will be in contact with you shortly. So very quickly, I mean like within 2 hours, I was contacted by phone, and the person on the other end identified themselves with two different names because I confused them deliberately to see if I was getting a real name. But they told me under no circumstances should I pursue this, forget it, it never happened, and that it was an extraordinarily dangerous position that I was putting myself in if I pursued it in any manner or made it public. Well, I worked in mind sciences. I worked in behavior modifications. I worked in prisons. I worked in hospitals and hospitals for the criminally insane. I've seen some serious, very good work towards rehabilitating people who had brain damage or who were career criminals. And so on. I began to see these things were all being done without torture, without high voltage, without any sort of brain stimulation with high voltage. There were some drugs used, but very few. Most of it was done through the psychological approach, and most of it was done using hypnosis.
When you say it, what do you mean? What are you referring to? It was done.
Yeah, the people's bad behavior was turned around into good behavior patterns, and these people could be released back into the populace and be productive people. I mean, some of these people were quite talented. Many of them were well educated, and they were just stuck because they were not getting any help. So, I mean, all of this was classified. And I talked to many of the people I worked with, and believe me, there are some books out there that talk about, I have to skip over to this, a project that involved bringing the Nazi and fascist scientists into the United States. Well, I happen to be vice president of the airline that did that.
Ah, through Operation Paperclip.
Yes, that's correct. I was at the very tail end of it, where they were just moving the families around. But nevertheless, I'm in one of the books that was done by a Washington correspondent, and she's since revised it. But nevertheless, I look like a bad guy. Truth be known, when people are working for the intelligence community, they rarely ever know who their actual employer is. I thought I worked for the Defense Department, when in fact I was working directly for the CIA. I thought that I had a job working for NSA for a short period of time, and I didn't. I was working for the Department of State as an attaché. So this is the way the intelligence community operates, and it did operate very successfully. Unfortunately for them, though, I was in the wrong places at the wrong times, and I saw too much. And I could put the puzzle together.
Well, listen, we're going to take a time out, Mark. Excuse me. We'll take a time out when we come back.
Sure.
And is Kathy O'Brien with us tonight? Okay,
she's
terrific.
Right here.
Ah, excellent. Okay, we'll bring Kathy on as well. But when we come back, we'll get you to sort of connect how this Houston individual is connected with Kathy O'Brien, how it led to your rescuing her from the clutches of this Monarch Project, what Project Monarch was all about. And Kathy O'Brien will join us as well here on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us. MKUltra and Project Monarch. Kathy O'Brien, a high-level MKUltra victim and recovered survivor, is with us, and her rescuer, Mark Phillips, and their remarkable story, harrowing story, detailed in Transformation of America, and also Access Denied for Reasons of National Security. Mark is with us right now, and if we could just quickly move to the events
Absolutely.
Leading up to Kathy's rescue, and then we'll bring Kathy O'Brien on.
Well, when, as I said, I did come back from China, reported it, and then told to shut up about it, and then I was actually threatened. Threats are never done with any sort of intent. Usually if someone threatens you from the intelligence community, it's they're just warning you they're going to do something else, but they're not really going to follow through. I was very fortunate in that I had worked in the same areas of psychological warfare that the guys that I was talking to were attempting to invoke on me, and it wasn't working at all. But when I saw Kathy O'Brien and her daughter for the first time, it was at an airport, at the airport, and she looked exactly like a 1960s medium-level prostitute with a perpetual smile plastered on her face. I wanted to keep my distance from them because I had a pretty good reputation in Nashville. I really didn't need that sort of attention drawn to me because I knew too many people at the airport. When I got back, I made some phone calls to find out where I could get these two people some help and what it would take to get them out of that, because you can't just call somebody up and say, hey, you're under mind control, I'd like for you to leave. It doesn't work that way. You have to trigger them. And I had to know what some of her codes, keys, and triggers. I found out what they were. That was very fortunate. And as a result of me finding out what they were and rescuing her out of there, I lost $2.2 million that I'd paid taxes on. It was my life savings. And it just was wiped away with a stroke of a key on a keyboard. We've tried many years through many really fine people on the banking committees in both the House and the Senate to get my money back, and to no avail.
This is one of the Alphabet Intelligence agencies firing a shot across your bow because you were messing with, I guess, CIA property, which was Kathy O'Brien.
You're exactly correct.
Now, what were the circumstances? Why did Kathy and did you say her daughter approach you in the airport?
No, they didn't really approach me. They were just there to pick up Houston because we had just come back from a flight, an overseas flight.
They were there to pick up her handler. Her handler, this Houston, who was your former business partner.
Yeah, but he was. I really didn't like him. He was not a very likable fellow. And to even imagine that somebody with his intellectual level could be connected into the White House, even as a pimp, it just didn't make any sense to me. I mean, yes, I knew all about people, particularly lowlifes, that maintain what you call them sex slaves or slaves. There were very few of those kind of comments made around me, but nevertheless, I didn't know what these guys were doing until I found out they were using trauma-based mind control. Trauma-based mind control is they found drawings in some French caves. CIA's got pictures. I got pictures of them. And that was done thousands upon thousands of years ago in a pictorial sequence.
So the idea is that you ritualistically abuse someone to the point where their psyche is fractured, compartmentalized, and then that person it's basically dissociative disorder. Roseanne
right.
Barr, of course, has gone public. This is what she endured. And then once you fracture that psyche and compartmentalize the brain, you can hide secrets in the different compartments, and even the victim isn't aware.
The victim is totally unaware.
Right. And so they're used to pass information?
I'm sorry?
They're used then as mules. They can pass secrets to intelligence groups and so forth. They can also be programmed to be assassins and different things.
Well, I had seen people involved in espionage, both corporate as well as state secrets, that were caught. These people were programmed, and it was the job of the units that I worked within to extract the information out of these people, reprogram them with more information that some of it would be self-toxic to the whole of the information that was provided to them. In other words, you know, it was like the formula for rat poison. 0.2% is deadly. The rest of it is all nutritional for the rat. And that was what we did. And these guys would go back to their homeland with all this new, fresh information. They would turn it over to them, to whomever, and then they'd be sent back in because they were very happy that they thought they had great information, when in fact it set our enemies years and years behind in their research and development of certain things.
All right, let's. If I could, let me bring Kathy O'Brien aboard. Kathy, welcome to the Conspiracy Show.
Hold on, I'll hand her the phone.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the
Hi.
Conspiracy Show. Good to have you aboard.
Well, I appreciate it.
And again, Kathy, you and Mark, along with Roseanne Barr, will be speaking in Toronto October the 20th at an event sponsored or presented by Conspiracy Culture. conspiracyculture.com for information and details on how to get tickets. Kathy, we don't have a lot of time, regrettably. How are you being used specifically by or as a CIA asset, if you will?
I was used on a White House Pentagon level to carry out criminal covert operations, deliver messages to and from government leaders. And, of course, these were back in the days before the Internet. This was during the Reagan-Bush administration, and technology wasn't as advanced as it is now. And besides, they felt it was much more secure to put it in the information in a mind-control slave like myself, who could only deliver verbatim what I was told to do. The criminals that were in control of my mind, that are still in control of the U.S. government today, just believed that I could never be deprogrammed to remember those things that I'd been tortured and programmed to forget. And they just never counted on someone with Mark Phillips' background, someone who had, who was privy to information, would actually be using it for good, to restore a mind rather than control one.
Why did they choose you? Were you just swept off the street one day, taken to some lair and abused to the point where you developed a dissociative disorder that they could use for their advantage?
Well, my father did that. I was sexually abused as a child, and he was using me in child pornography that was being sent through the U.S. mails. And at that time, this criminal faction of our government was actually sanctioning the local Michigan Mafia child pornography ring in order to target children like myself, because it was known through Hitler, Himmler research and more, that children who were horribly abused would be prime candidates for MKUltra mind control. Abuse makes a person highly suggestible, and when a child is abused to the extent that I was prior to age 5, it created a dissociative identity disorder, which made me easy to program and be led. At that time, the politician who was from our area, he was just a local politician back then, was Gerald Ford, and that's the same Gerald Ford that went on to become the unelected president of the United States. And as his political career rose, so too did my victimization. That's how I came to be on a White House Pentagon level.
And how were you used in the capacity of a sex slave? Were other politicians, political enemies, placed in compromising positions with you so that they could be blackmailed?
Absolutely. Well stated, yes. Because I had been sexually abused, my sexuality was heightened, and therefore that was used for blackmail, compromising positions, and it brought me in and out of the White House, and I was also prostituted to various government leaders. All this is detailed, of course, in our book, Transformation of America. And Transformation of America is our congressional testimony condensed and put in book form, which is now in law libraries worldwide.
Now, take us so that we understand. Many of us, our knowledge of mind control is limited by Richard Condon's The Manchurian Candidate, and someone receives a phone call and they say, it's time to play
right.
A little solitaire. I mean, is that the way it works, that you're going about your daily business, all of a sudden there's a code word and you suddenly become someone else, you go off and you do these things, horrible things, you have no memory of them, and then all of a sudden you wake
right.
up and you're back onto your normal schedule? How does that work?
Right. Yeah. You described it quite well. But as far as having any kind of a normal life, I didn't. I lost that at a very early age, because when trauma occurs repeatedly and is systematic, then it just leaves it where there is no more conscious thought. Under MKUltra mind control, I had no ability to reason or consciously comprehend anything, and no ability to question. I didn't know how old I was, what the date was, how much time was passing, because without any kind of continuity of conscious thought, there's no ability to comprehend time passing. So, therefore, I didn't really have any kind of a normal life from about the age of 6 years old on right up until Mark rescued my daughter and I in 1988.
Yes, how did that happen? How did Mark rescue you?
Well, I was turning 30 years old, and at 30 years old, there's electrochemical changes that happen in the brain. Oftentimes, people who have been abused will begin to remember around age 30, because it's just the way the brain is, the way it operates. Because of that, I was to be killed at that point so that I would die with the information that I had been exposed to, just to make sure that none of it would ever leak in from the compartments, the way it's been compartmentalized in my brain. And when that happened, that was right at the same time that Mark Phillips came into my life. And
because his ex-partner was your handler.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And he was sending me off to be killed, and knew that I was going to be. And when Mark rescued me, I couldn't think to trust him, for him to be able to help me. I couldn't think consciously at all. Besides, I'd long since given up on the idea that good people even existed in the world. But I saw that his animals trusted him. Mark had fox, he had raccoons and other animals, and they all just loved him. He's a real nature person, real attuned in harmony with the beauty of life like that. And people I was exposed to abused animals. Because when people abuse children, they abuse animals and vice versa. And because of that, I'd never seen an animal treated well, and one that could trust like his did. With that very first inkling of sensing that I could trust, that was the first step towards my being able to apply the healing techniques that he taught me. Those are detailed in our book, Access Denied for Reasons of National Security. And the information that we have detailed in that book, the healing methods that he taught me, are now helping other people. Because it is detailed in the book, people are applying that information to themselves, and they're healing from varying levels of trauma, abuse, PTSD, torture, and control, whether it be from military special forces, or from cult, occult mind control, or childhood sexual abuse. No matter what form of mind manipulation that and abuse that people are suffering from, they're able to heal with this information and the very simple self application methods.
How long did it take for you, Kathy? How long did it take? How long did it take for you?
Well, many years. It took me approximately 9 months to really gain a concept of conscious awareness, and that was because I was monitoring time watching a watch that Mark had strapped to my arm, and I was able to finally connect with the capacity for conscious thought, which was a really, really powerful turning point. Once I had conscious thought, I became responsible for my actions, and at that point I had to deprogram, and I wrote out my memory. After I wrote out my memory, which took several years, then I found that I had to learn to think from there, because I hadn't thought for myself since I was about 6 years old.
Kathy, I got to take a break. I got to jump in here. Sorry, take a break. Music is coming up, so we'll reconnect on the other side, and we'll continue our conversation with MKUltra victim and recovered survivor Kathy O'Brien and her rescuer, Mark Phillips, here on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us. Welcome back.
Yes.
Kathy O'Brien is a fully rehabilitated United States government, White House, Pentagon-level mind control survivor whose testimony for the U.S. Congressional Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence Oversight was censored for so-called reasons of national security. She joins us on the line along with her rescuer, Mark Phillips. And they'll both be speaking in Toronto October the 20th, a Conspiracy Culture special event, conspiracyculture.com for details. And the event is called MKUltra and Project Monarch, A Survivor's Tale. Kathy, what is specifically, what is Project Monarch?
Monarch is just a sub-project of MKUltra, and it's one that's of multi-generational abuse. And it was found through the Hitler-Himmler studies that multi-generational abuse is one that continuously perpetuates, like the my parents were abused, and therefore they were abusing me. And in my case, it was like a hundredth monkey where things just took a total change. And with healing came the opportunity to be able to live my life true to soul. And is an absolute celebration that I enjoy every day now that I'm free to think for myself. Without free thought, there's no free will, and without free will, there is no soul expression. And it's it disrupts a whole purpose of life and a whole meaning of life. There's no ability to stand for those things that you believe in. Now that I'm healed, I have my strength of spirit. And that's why we continue to speak out on mind control and healing from it, because ultimately there's a lot of people that have been abused in this world that need to heal and regather that strength of spirit so they too can live their lives fully and make a positive difference in the world.
Of course, you know, there are countless victims of some form of a sexual abuse, child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, though, were abused with the intent and purpose of creating some sort of
right.
super soldier or super spy,
right.
But the suffering is, you know, no less severe, obviously. But
yes, and their suggestibility level automatically heightens regardless, so they will be more easily led under, no matter what their life's path is from that point, because it's just the way the brain functions.
Right.
And the information on how our brain functions is something that people have a right to know and a need to know in order to continue to think free and, you know, stop some of this corruption in the world and restore the kind of values that are innate to humanity.
You were talking about the experiments in Nazi Germany, and that was obviously one of the purposes, along with the rocket scientists, of course, that
yes.
Many Nazis were exfiltrated out of the United States or into the United States under Operation
right.
Paperclip, and taking over much of the security apparatus in the United States. But I shudder to think. You know, this was 70 years ago or more that, you know, the Nazis were working on these programs using trauma and abuse, shock and awe, if you will. And then you flash forward to the 1950s where Dr. Delgado was, you know, planting electrodes in monkey brains and bulls' brains and modifying their behavior, controlling their behavior by remote control with a radio
mm-hmm.
transmitter. And here we are 60 years later. I shudder to think, what are they capable of now? What are your thoughts? What are they doing?
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure it's advanced technologically at this point. At the same time, technology has also advanced in the private sector, like with computerization, where these criminals have been operating on the philosophy that secret knowledge equals power. And as their secrets are being told, their power base is eroding, and they're losing their grip. And the people are beginning to rise up all over the world and reclaim their strength of spirit and stand for their freedoms once again. So mind control is prevails worldwide, and it's something now that as awareness continues to rise, it starts to diminish, because knowledge is our defense against mind control. And it's just imperative that we continue to bring the information to light, and it will make the positive necessary changes, stopping this blight on humanity.
Barely a week goes by that I don't receive an email. In addition to the radio show, I have a television show that airs across Canada. And one of the episodes that aired in repeats recently was on electronic harassment. And that spawned all of these emails from people who saw the episode, one from a 60-year-old woman who says that she's an emergency room doctor who was looking forward to retirement, but recently was victimized by what she suspects is some form of electronic harassment. And as I say, I'm getting more and more of these emails. I'm just wondering, you know, what on earth is going on? Who is targeting these people, and why?
They sure don't think like we do. They've got a totally different power trip agenda that I can't relate to in any way. And it's just time for people to reclaim that strength of spirit that I keep referring to, because you know, when you consider technology, technology doesn't have soul. Computers don't have an understanding of the strength of the human spirit, and that is the vast difference that we have. That's where we win and they lose. In order to gather a strength of spirit, though, people need to think free. They need to think beyond what they're being told by the controlled medias. Turn to more medias like you have here, and where people can learn to think again and expand their thinking. And my own healing process, one thing that I did was always consider other perceptions, consider other angles. Before I would draw a conclusion, I had to expand my thinking beyond just what I thought I knew. And that helped me to be able to get a full grasp on free thought and understanding.
All right. Kathy O'Brien, Mark Phillips stays with us. Stay with us. The Conspiracy Show back with more. Don't go away. And just a quick programming note. Next week, I will be off. Sitting in the air chair will be our good friend Victor Vigiani, Executive Director of Zealand News Network. And he'll be speaking with world-renowned ufologist, documentary award-winning documentary filmmaker Linda Moulton Howe. And while we're at it, just a quick note for those living in the Greater Toronto Area. Victor Vigiani will be delivering a presentation called UFOs, The Politics of Reality at the Mississauga Central Library. That's 301 Burnhamthorpe Road West, Mississauga City Center. And that is Wednesday, October the 9th. Part 2 will be Wednesday, October the 23rd from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Admission, a mere $2. If you want to have your world rocked, you know, head out to the Mississauga City Center and catch Victor's presentation, UFOs, The Politics of Reality. Your life will never be the same. All right. Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips, stay with us for a few moments yet as we discuss her incredible ordeal as a victim of MK Ultra's Project Monarch CIA mind control program. And Mark Phillips, of course, was her rescuer. Now, I'm just wondering what you make of, you know, recent events. We had, whenever we have one of these horrible, you know, tragedies, a mass shooting, or even this poor woman who was obviously suffering from a postpartum depression, among other things, that was shot on Capitol Hill in Washington, these things start to, you know, come to the surface. In the case of the Ariel in the Navy, the Washington Navy Yard shooting, you know, complaining about hearing voices in his head, talking about being subjected to extremely low frequency electromagnetic radiation. And in many of these cases, we find that these people are on some sort of psychoactive drugs. There's often a military component in their history. What do you think? Are these people, by and large, mind control victims?
Well, mind control is a common thread weaving through all these traumas that we're seeing. And then in addition to that, when society continues to see that kind of trauma, it also starts rendering them more suggestible and more easily led. Fear is a great controller, and truth frees us from fear, and we just simply need to learn the truth of mind control. And once your eyes are open to that truth, you'll begin seeing it all around and begin to understand what's happening in our society in a manner where we can start to reclaim our minds, our lives, and our peace and harmony.
To a lesser degree, I mean, most of us, thank God, have not been subjected to the kind of horrible abuse that you were as a child. But to a certain extent, we are all victims of mind control. We're all being subjected to this campaign of shock and awe, whether it was 9/11 or whether it's a constant bombardment in the nightly news of, you know, horrible tragedies and so forth. For those of us who are, victims of brainwashing, what can we do to reclaim our liberty and our sanity?
Realizing that it's a problem is the first step. Awareness is always the first step towards positive change. But learning to expand thinking and thinking further, one of the first things that Mark taught me in that regard was to voice no negatives without a solution. Since what I'd experienced was so negative, you know, that certainly put my mind in a little bit different direction, where I had to push my brain and start to learn to think further beyond just what I'm told. And everybody needs to exercise their brain out a bit and learn to expand their thinking and realize the goodness of humanity is what prevails in this world. It's not this negativity that we're being bombarded with at the moment.
MK Ultra is, I mean, I believe at one point there was I'm not sure if it was CIA Director Woolsey or some CIA director, stood up in Congress and said, admitted that there was an MK Ultra program, but that it was no longer operational. Is that true?
Well, that's been said several times, and every time it's brought up, it stopped, and then it's just pushed underground and pops up in another way. Until people everywhere become aware of it, it's going to take a natural evolution with the knowledge in order to make the actual change. You know, people just need to reclaim it for themselves instead of count on Congress to do it for us. Congress isn't going to do anything but continue to perpetuate lies.
The incredible, incredibly horrible, fact of missing children. You know, you see children on posters and every street corner these days seems to have a picture of a missing child.
Yeah.
Do you have a handle on what percentage of these missing children are in fact caught up in some organized child sex ring, or which ultimately may lead to this MK Ultra program?
I can't imagine what numbers that would be, but you know, anytime something like that occurs, you've got a trauma, and when trauma occurs, the brain automatically compartmentalizes it. So with the conscious mind, you know, having that compartmentalized and the memory of it pushed deep in any way, it leaves a person suggestible and easily led. It leaves the subconscious open and vulnerable where it's going to be led. So, you know, mind control is a sliding scale, whether it's a kind of robotic mind control that I experienced or if it's the kind that people experience just by information control and turning on their television and watching the horror of the nightly news or something. You know, so any child that's missing or abducted in any way has got to be suffering some horrible ramifications from that.
All right, let's go to the phones, and we have John in Tennessee. John, welcome to the Conspiracy Show. You're on the line with Kathy O'Brien.
Well, first, it's actually Sean. That's
Sean.
Okay, though,
all right, but thank you. Welcome, Sean.
Yeah, Sean in Tennessee. I'm just glad that the word is really getting out about this because it is so crucial. I've often wondered, I don't know if I myself personally have been all that victimized from this myself, but I mean, it's really kind of hard to really pinpoint anything specifically. But
it sounds like you have suspicions, though, that Sean, that you may have been victimized by a mind control program.
I don't know if it's to any kind of extreme degree that I often hear about now with these people, such as what happened in the yard there in Washington, D.C. I did happen to, you know, over a period of years when I was a lot younger, be put on certain, you know, types of drugs, you know. But I do know that that isn't really as much a problem anymore, essentially. But I do often wonder, you know, like it's mostly, I notice the thing with information control, you know, which most people commonly have. And I do, you know, I've had a lot of ideas just like this over the years, but I didn't really know how to explain, you know, like exactly what this your guest is explaining or not. But it just kind of confirmed what I figured all along, that we've got people that do this kind of stuff in our government. And I've always been, I think with good reason, cynical of a lot of folks in the government because of this.
All right, John, good to hear from you, and I appreciate your call. Thank you. Cynical is right. Kathy, how do you respond to you know, many people listening, perhaps, even thinking this is just beyond the pale to think that, you know, members of our government, maybe, you know, leading all the way up to the White House, would be party to such heinous crimes involving child pornography, child sex rings, just too unimaginable, really.
Well, the evidence is there, and it's continuously coming forth in the news because with the Internet, the information is definitely getting out there, and even with some that has come out recently, it's shown that Hillary Clinton, for example, was involved in it. So they're different than we are in many ways because...
Wait a second. Hillary Clinton has been involved in a mind control program? Or we have to be careful about this, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking about
a public figure. She is named in both Transformation of America and Access Denied, and she was just removed from her State Department job for running prostitution and criminal activities.
So. Okay, we have to be careful about that. I'd have to say, you know, that's a pretty serious allegation. I'm not familiar with that accusation being leveled at her, being involved in prostitution. However, people will have to read Access Denied, I guess, and determine that for themselves. But
or turn to the Internet, because the information has leaked out, and it did cost her job. So, I mean, it's out there. It's there, and people just need to open their eyes and see that there are some criminals that are in high positions that need to be taken out of those offices, and people need to just reclaim their lives and control over their own lives.
Kathy, one might ask,
people
might ask, you know, why were you allowed to live, and why you continued to allowed to tell your story and go public with this? What has prevented whoever these perpetrators are from sort of removing you from the scene?
Well, they never believed that I could be deprogrammed to remember, for starters, and then we put the information out there en masse, which is essential for anyone in a position like we are, for any kind of whistleblower, to get the information out there en masse. And then when the 1947 National Security Act was invoked on our congressional testimony, that is what has allowed us to keep speaking out all these years. We can't have any conventional justice through the courts, but we can realize the ultimate justice of positive change through public awareness.
Again, you'll be appearing here in Toronto October the 20th. That's a Sunday. I believe it gets started around 3 o'clock and goes right through until 8 p.m., and that's at Trinity St. Paul's United Church, 427 Bloor Street West, just a five-minute walk from the Spadina subway station. Kathy O'Brien, Mark Phillips, and, of course, comedian, writer, producer Roseanne Barr will be speaking as well about MKUltra in Hollywood. Kathy, I really appreciate your time tonight.
Well, I certainly do appreciate it, and we're looking forward to coming in with the event. The details will certainly be a positive plus, and we'll be focused on solutions.
All right, and thanks also to Mark Phillips for coming on. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
All right. Mark Phillips, Kathy O'Brien, and Roseanne Barr coming to Toronto. And again, conspiracyculture.com. You click onto the website and all the information is there about that event. All right, again, next week, Victor Vigiani sitting in for yours truly. Linda Moulton Howe will be his guest. So be sure to check that out. Tim Spreen, thank you for technical production. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.